Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio, as we welcome our listeners from around the world, and we have an outstanding show tonight. Joining us in just a few moments, gosh, he doesn't really need an introduction, but host of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, member of the Explorers Club, adventure explorer, wildlife handler Jim Fowler will be with us, as well as from the Chicago area, nationally known reptile expert and handler Jim Nessie will be joining us. We're going to be discussing the recent windfall of, news regarding the Ohio wildlife tragedy that we've all become quite familiar with, and how this is going to affect really good wildlife educators. And we're going to try and get a little focus on this subject tonight, and we're very excited about having both of our guests, and it's going to be a great program. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, technical engineer, Wayne Larson, the music, Jim Johnson, and from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and usually somewhat humble, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Oh, well, good evening, Mr. Batson. Boy, it sure takes a lot of people to put this show on the air.
It certainly does. Well, you know, we want to do something good, so it requires a large staff.
That's right. Absolutely. And they're very good at what they do.
They certainly are. So how are things in Indianapolis?
Well, it's slightly wet here right now. 48 degrees, humidity's about 90%, but it's kind of nice.
Well, I have to tell you the truth, Dr. Day. You know, we have our collection of alligators that we've received from various confiscations and donations and so forth, and here it is, November the, what is it, the 2nd, the 3rd? The 3rd of November, and they're still out of doors. We've had such a mild fall, and they're talking about 60 and 70 degree weather this weekend in Indiana. So looks like first of the week we'll be capturing and moving them inside, but this has been the longest they've ever stayed outside, so I cannot believe it.
Well, I hope you're going to invite me again this year to help you bring them in.
Well, you'll have an open invitation. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com. That's right, larrytheanimalguy.com. Or send check or money order for $10 per copy, autographed, to WES 4140 North, 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
It's now time, from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. Yeah, I know.
The Taliban has taken over our show.
Again. Well, this is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for November 3rd. Now, I hate to do this, but our first story tonight is going to upset our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, because, as we know, she loves sharks.
Yes.
All right, Juneau, Alaska. Authorities said a ship seized for illegal fishing held nearly twice as many sharks as initially believed. Now, NOAA Fisheries spokeswoman Julie Spiegel said that scientists counted 54 carcasses while taking tissue samples.
Oh.
Now, authorities initially thought that there were 30 ships aboard the Bagan Pekaska, seized by the Coast Guard last month after a report that it had been illegally fishing with a drift net. Now, don't do that because Big Brother is watching.
Well, good for Big Brother. That's just too bad.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable that, you know, Alaska.
Who would have thought it?
Well, we've got two stories from New York tonight. Here's our first. Pulaski, New York. After more than a century without a wild breeding population, researchers from the U.S. Geological Survey have found young Atlantic salmon in the Salmon River for the third year in a row.
Oh, great.
Now, when the young salmon mature, eggs will be taken from some of them to propagate at the USGS Research Laboratory in Cortland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the goal is to establish a species that had a prominent place in the cultural history of that region. So it's good to see those little guys are coming back, which means everything else is going to do well, too.
That's great for the ecosystem in that part of the world. I mean, it'll affect everything, so that's fantastic news.
That's right. Now, our second story tonight from the city so nice they named it twice New York, New York. Now, listen to this. A Norwegian forest cat named Jack, who escaped from his carrier at Kennedy Airport on August 25th,
mm-hmm.
fell through the ceiling of the customs area this week.
Oh.
Yes. Now, Customs and the Border Protection spokesperson, Anthony Bucci, said that the long-haired feline was reunited with its owner this week.
Karen
is happy to have.
That sounds like a Jim Fowler story.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes,
now,
it does.
Now, this little kitty has been up in the rafters for all this time, and it apparently has found food and water to survive.
Well, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
Norway cat.
Go ahead.
Norway cat, huh?
Yeah, yep. Norway cat. That's the voice of legendary Jim Fowler.
My goodness.
Yes, it is. Now, Jim's going to like this next story, too. Now, here's something that I've always wanted, and I know you have, too. Rich Manor, Florida. University of Central Florida biologist Daniel Parker said a rare two-headed albino milk snake hatched last week in an incubation container.
Mm.
Now, Parker said two-headed snakes have been documented to live as long as 20 years in captivity. But, as we know, with two brains, giving commands to each to a single body, the snake would have a hard time surviving in the wild.
Yes, it would.
Yes, it would.
I don't know why that's funny, but I think it's the laugh of Jim Fowler in the background.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Isn't that great?
Well, you got to, those snakes are really heads up, I'll tell you that.
All right, I have to do my Marlon Perkins impression tonight then.
Uh-oh.
I'll hover safely here in the helicopter while Jim wrestles the giant anaconda in the swamp below.
Right. Johnny Carson used to say that I was the only guy Marlon could find who was dumb enough to do what he said to do. Yep.
Johnny, boy, we loved him. All right, we're heading off to Moose, Wyoming. And what does a bear have to do with Moose, Wyoming? Well, here's a story. I say, know your environment before you go out it. All right, Moose, Wyoming. A hunter who was attacked by a bear in the Grand Teton National Park is expected to be released from the hospital on this last Monday. Now, Timothy Hick, 32, told Rangers that he surprised what he believed was a grizzly bear.
Mm.
Yeah, well, if you're going to be out in that environment, you should know your bears.
Yes, you should.
Yeah, now, this happened Sunday in an area between Blacktail Ponds and the Glacier View Overlooks.
Oh.
Now, the good thing is the bear bit him a couple of times and ran away.
Mm. My guess, it was probably a black bear.
That would be my guess, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the grizzly, that, you know, he wouldn't be telling the story.
No, we've had Bob Jackson, Yellowstone Park Ranger, and he's gone into that forest, so we don't
yeah.
need to.
In detail, yes.
In quite detail, yeah.
All right, now here's a reminder. Deer are on the move this time of the year. Now, the mating season's started in late October and will run into, you know, a few weeks here into November. Now, here's the problem. The males are so focused on mating, they're not thinking straight.
Oh.
They're looking for mates and other males to fight.
Yeah.
So just beware. If you see a deer crossing sign, take your time.
Well, and I always tell the people around here, because we have so many deer and so many are struck each year on our roads, that when that first one runs across the road, wait, because there's always the second or third one that will follow, and that's usually the ones that people will hit with their cars. So
that's right.
When you see the first one run across the road, just wait a little bit, see if a couple follow, or one or two, you know, whatever. But that's my advice tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, either
right,
that, or you can always go to a singles bar in New York and become educated about what to do about bucks.
Jim Fowler's going to lose all credibility tonight.
All right, now here's a wild, out-of-the-world news tonight. If you pack a telescope and you want to exchange glances with the asteroid crossing our path next week, well, the U.S. sky watchers will see the asteroid 2005 YU55 zip past the bright star Altair about 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November 8th.
Oh.
Now, Altair is basically directly above the North Star. If you see the little dipper, look up to the northeast, and that's the path that the asteroid is going to take. Now, the space rock hits into the constellation Pegasus around 1 a.m. that night.
I'll remember that date because it's
remember
the day my phone
day.
Bill is due.
Now, here's an interesting story. Did you know that Dunkin' Donuts is now serving turkey?
Really?
Kingston, New Hampshire. A turkey has adopted the town as its home and is often seen hanging out at the Carriagetown Plaza. Now, some call him Tom. Others prefer gobbles. But the bird really responds to food, especially the munchkins at the local Dunkin' Donuts, where he's often seen at the drive-through window.
God.
It's the season.
Yes, it is.
That's called the fly-through window now. God.
All right. Oh. Now, hey, have you got any leftover Halloween candy?
A little.
Well, save it for later. Now, dark and milk chocolates can last up to 2 years if they're stored in a dry, odor-free spot.
Yeah.
Hard candy can last up to a year. Unopened packages of candy corn can last for 9 months. Now, here's the thing. If you got hard candy or candy corn, throw it out now. Just get rid of it.
What's that got to do with Wild World Day?
Absolutely nothing. All right. Now, the last thing I'm going to say tonight.
Yeah.
Is wild animals aren't pets. And that's the Wild World News for November 3rd.
Well, once again, a commendable job by Dr. Henry Day and his staff compiling the Wild World News. We want to tell everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge, beautiful, scenic Estes Park, Colorado. On the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park, we call it God's Country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Brand new underwriter, and this is very exciting, folks. The Icebox is an affordable, lightweight, and packable, I can't get it right, tool for building a snow shelter in any snow conditions. Folks, you can build your own igloo with this. This is an absolutely fascinating product, an Icebox igloo engineered for strength, stability, comfort, and ease of use is the added advantage for you who have been looking for something special for your winter adventure in the outdoors. Discover the advantage of winter camping. Build an igloo. Here's the website. Check it all out. It's www.grandshelters.com. Also, a big thank you to Cobalt Blue Press Bookstore in historic Knightstown, Indiana. The shelves are stocked with new and rare and gently used books, including many hard-to-find children's titles. Whether it's your favorite author or subject, owner Shannon Dawson, that's Shannon Dawson, will find any book online for you. Contact her on Facebook or Twitter, or visit the store 7 days a week, free coffee, Wi-Fi, and a cozy reading area, Cobalt Blue Press, corner of Main and Jefferson, Knightstown, Indiana. And also RadioMom.fm in the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on goods and services, vacations. It's all great. That's at RadioMom.com. How about my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Sounds of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. I remember that music as the family would gather around the television and watch the adventures of Marlon Perkins and our guest tonight, Jim Fowler. It's great to have Jim Fowler on the show. Quite the comedian as well. Good evening, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Thought we'd lost
him. Who are you again? I don't think I remember. Oh, yeah, I know who you are. I'm sorry. I've known Larry for what, 20 years, Larry?
Oh, no, I'm afraid it's longer than that. I'm so sorry.
Longer than
closer
that?
To 30.
Okay.
So, yeah, close to 30, Jim. It's hard to believe.
Okay.
Also from Chicago, Illinois, reptile educator and quite the expert on alligators, Jim Nessie joins us. Good evening, Jim.
Thank you, Larry. I'm hoping that you're not getting too much noise in the background here. I thought I was going to be in a more of a secure area, but I apologize if it's too much noise.
Well, we're enjoying the tunes they are playing tonight, so...
Sorry about that.
Tonight's a serious subject. We've had a lot of fun here tonight, but we're going to go back to a few weeks ago with an event that happened in the state of Ohio that we're afraid that everyone involved that works with wild animals and is educators, licensed with the United States Department of Agriculture and various state agencies, this is going to affect, as we call it, the Ohio wildlife tragedy. And I think, first of all, I would like the thoughts of our legendary guest, Jim Fowler, to I'm not going to say a couple words because he's not capable of that. But
that's true.
That's to start off tonight.
How long is your program tonight?
We can go as long as we need to go.
Really?
Yes, we can.
Well, I know Jim Netsky can talk a lot because he's got, I don't know if he has it with him, but he's got one of the only big alligators, 8-foot alligators that's been trained like a dog so that you can see his intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, doesn't it come when you call? And
He's absolutely a phenomenon. I mean, there's no other word for it. He walks up my basement stairs, heads out to the garage. I tell him up, and he climbs right into my van and puts his head in between the two front seats. And that's
wow.
The way he'll ride. And, you know, I've had people say, well, that's impossible. You can't train an alligator. And of course, I never accepted the premise that they were, you know, just a primitive beast. Prehistoric,
right.
Yes. Primitive, no.
Well, they don't wag their tail like a dog, but you got to watch out for that tail with an alligator, in fact. But that doesn't have a whole lot to do, Larry, with the thing in Ohio, does it?
Afraid not.
Except, I'll say this. If an animal looks dangerous or, you know, has teeth, we handle it, and our regulatory agencies look at it totally differently from one that you can think is smiling or has some human characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big problems with this whole thing in Ohio. You know, I just saw a show. I was glancing through television. I'm trying to see what's on there. And it was some people down, I imagine, in Louisiana somewhere who were catching gators. So they were the gator killers. Apparently, they've got a season on them down there. And, you know, I don't think anybody would write in and actually complain about that like they would about the cats that were killed out in Ohio. People don't seem to really care about killing alligators. Isn't that right, Jim?
Well, I think guys that know them wouldn't try to kill them, but in general, in the wild, I'm hoping
they
that,
associate,
the last 34 years I've been doing programs, I think we're reaching people, and that's, you know, Larry and I had talked about the fact, and I've talked about it with you, Jim, about how important it is to reach the public on every level with all these animals.
Well, that's the key to the whole thing, and what the Ohio situation could do, it could make it much, much more difficult for somebody who's a genuine educator and an effective educator to take some animals around to schools, for example, and introduce people, adults and children, to something that's here on this planet with us that is equally amazing and that we should learn to respect. I'm very concerned about the Ohio situation because, you know, like some of the other people, I've lectured with animals before the public for a long, long time, and I now have kids coming up to me that say that they watched me when they were quite young, and that's one of the reasons they went into the field of zoology and were trying to help save animals. And so what happens is, and I'll just set this premise, one of the unfortunate situations about politicians and regulatory agencies is one of the first concerns they have is called job security. So it's much easier to prohibit everything so nobody can come back to you and say, how come that guy had some animals or how come that person got bit? You should have outlawed that up front. So they're always sort of chasing, protecting their backside by making sure that they can prohibit as many things as possible because their job is more secure that way. The reason I say that is a lot of the regulatory rules that are coming down really are not doing any good because often they regulate the things that don't really have a history of hurting human beings. The USDA has gone from an agency to enact Animal Welfare Act to an agency that now is supposedly protecting people from animals. I mean, this is beyond belief that they can switch that, but, of course, the reason they are is that they have the responsibility on a few of the media events that where an animal person is hurt by an animal. It's on the media so extensively that these regulatory agencies now, in my opinion, I'm being a little cruel because I do believe that we should have regulations, don't get me wrong, but you can't overdo it because you're going to destroy the capability of affecting public attitudes in the most effective way that we have, and that's show them something alive and real. But anyway, I've got some real problems with that because a lot of the things that hurt people, have nothing to do with animals. And I don't even, by the way, Larry, I don't even call an animal a wild animal.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people that are handling animals on television that say you can't take the wild out of a wild animal. And
well,
all this kind of stuff. Well, you and I both know that's not correct. Now, it's okay to call your program Wild World.
Mm-hmm.
And you can call an animal out of the wild, but to call the animal wild, all that does is make the public think that the animal's going to kill us and eat us.
Yeah.
And we go back a long time. You know, we go back to the days when animals were coming into the caves and having us for dinner. So one of the reasons that an animal injury or when somebody's hurt by an animal, like that guy with the grizzly or the woman in Stamford, Connecticut, that's a chimpanzee bit, or Siegfried and Roy, where the tiger got him there a little bit. One of the reasons that's on the media all the time is that, first of all, it's so rare that it's called newsworthy. But here's the other thing I want to lay out to you guys, because I've been trying to figure all this out for a long time. We humans are programmed genetically to be horrified by the idea of being bitten or clawed. It's in our genetic material, because we actually were the prey species at one time, and that's been really ingrained into our system. People are horrified by the idea of being bitten by a dog or cat or snake. And one of the reasons for that is that the tooth or the claw of an animal will create shock in your nervous system. If it bites you or latches on, it severs the nerve endings in your system. I've seen four or five big cats, big lions on the back of a buffalo in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And once they bite the neck and put the claws in, that buffalo is in a state of shock. And he's basically unconscious before he's killed.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. That's true in humans with a knife, for example. If you ever wondered why a knife is so dangerous, the reason is that it severs nerve endings and puts the victim in a state of shock. And shock is a very tricky thing to handle. So anyway, we haven't been around on this planet long enough to be horrified by driving on I-75 or I-95 out of New York City. If we had been programmed genetically, if we've been around with machines only a very short time, we don't have that horrification of machines. I've seen things on 95 that are much more horrible than getting bitten by a cheetah or, you know, by a baboon or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's one of the problems. The last thing I want to say just to start this discussion off is that, you know, we don't have, we need regulations in order for somebody to have a sanctuary. And we need inspection so the animals are taken care of. But there was an article in the Washington paper recently by a guy who is pretty well known, has been a documentary film producer. And he basically lambasted the guy in Ohio for having those cats. But he also started talking about the fact that nobody should have any animals out of the wild. Well, he's wrong. He's very wrong about that. And one of the reasons is that he's one of those guys, like, I have a friend who's head of the Humane Society, Wayne Passell. And he, you know, he comes out and says one of the reasons he enjoyed animals all his life is that he watched Wild Kingdom.
Yeah.
And but the point is, Wayne has got, he's doing some really good things. This other gentleman is accustomed to speaking out to the public. He's got the ability to get on the newspaper like the Washington papers. But what he's missing is that, you know, animals in the wild are not having a very good time, to tell the truth. This is one of the points that should be made.
Mm-hmm.
We have people that think that animals in the wild are frolicking around, playing and jumping around.
Yes.
Hey, listen, in the wild, it's pretty rough. Animals are actually hunting, killing, and eating each other. That's the way they survive. One of the reasons all the zebras look fat and happy in Africa is that the ones, the weak, sick, and the stupid, have been eaten by the lion.
Yeah, amen.
And frankly, there's some points about that in the human world, too, which I won't go into right now. But the predators take off the weak, the sick, and the stupid and make it possible for the species to improve itself by always having the best of the species doing the breeding. Well, if you look at that from a humane standpoint, you know, animals are, first of all, they're being shot, they're being pushed out of their habitats, and they're going hungry a lot and dying because of the overpopulation in some areas. They have to... The tipping point arrives, and if the resources have been consumed. That's a pretty rough life. The second thing I want to say is probably the worst thing that's happening to animals in America is not in a sanctuary. The worst thing is on the highway system. There are millions and millions of animals, innocent animals, if we want to call them that way, walking across the roads in America. And if you look at the highway system,
mm-hmm.
an animal can't go more than half a mile before he's in danger of being run over. And I don't hear anybody talking about that. It's a shame because that's one of our biggest problems. Anyway, I will open that discussion up about the situation in Ohio. I don't think it's good for anybody to not have a better situation in captivity for the animal than it has in the wild. But if you start saying that no animal should be out of the wild, that they should be living in their own habitats, you're missing a big point. If it weren't for zoological parks in America, most people wouldn't even have any association with an animal. And right now it's tough enough. You know, there are only about 2,000 tigers left in India, and if you don't see an animal eye to eye, it's highly unlikely that you're going to be connected with it strong enough to take action and try to save it in the wild. So we're playing with fire when we just arbitrarily say that nobody should have an animal in Ohio, for example, because there are lots of dedicated people who have been trained to work with animals, who want to work with animals. And frankly, I think it's more wrong to clear cut a forest or destroy wetlands than it is to want to work with an animal. That's been my history, and I will go into that further if we need to. But that's what I wanted to tell you, Larry. I'm afraid I've taken up my time, so let's listen to what you have to say.
Well, what really concerns me is that I have been an educator for 31 years. I know Jim has been an educator for 34 years. And you know, we're going to need a future generation of people to replace us, because Jim knows that how important these programs are, how well they are received by being done by people that are responsible, skilled animal handlers. And with the legislation and the laws that could come about, it would absolutely, you know, I really believe that it's going to be impossible, if these governments have their way, to make it possible for the future Jim Fowlers and Jim Nessies and, oh God, Larry Batsons to continue to do what we've been doing for all of these years.
Yeah, well, Larry, I think you're right on target. It's sad what's going on, and I see it here. I'm in the state of Illinois, and Illinois just recently suspended any permits for alligators, where an educator, you know, if you want to be an educator, you can't even get a permit for an alligator. And, you know, the reason being is because some of the water systems here, the Chicago River, some local lakes and stuff, and they're coming up with alligators.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the government has, you know, they paint with a broad brush. They want to punish everyone for a few.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the tough thing is for me, and what I see is when it would be so sad if the learning stops. And that's what it is. You continue to learn. And Larry, you know it. Jim knows it. If you're an animal person and you're in with animals and you work with them day in and day out, they're all individuals. There's no two alike. This last group of gators I brought in, I called it gator daycare. I had the bully. I had the scaredy cats in the corner. I had the cliques picking on certain individuals. They were like a bunch of school kids. My big gator, the one that we call Bubba, was the class valedictorian. You know, you have Einsteins in the human world, and you have Einsteins in the animal world. And if the learning stops for the kids and for these upcoming generations, it would be so sad. And I really mean that. It breaks your heart.
We're talking with Jim Fowler of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom and educator Jim Nessie. We're going to take a short break. We've got a fascinating discussion tonight, everybody. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back with Jim Fowler and Jim Nessie in just a few moments and discuss what we've called the Ohio wildlife tragedy and the legislation and laws that will follow afterwards. We want to tell everyone that next week on the program, we're going back to the musical world as Tim Bogert from, bands such as Vanilla Fudge, Cactus, Beck, Bogert, Appice is going to join us as we're talk a little bit about classic rock and roll next week on the program, so we hope everyone joins us. And we want to remind everyone that the week after that, returning to the show, Jim Nessie is going to join us. We're going to talk about reptiles and the work that he's done in the state of Illinois, so we're very excited to have him here. For the full hour, as we talk about his adventures with the old croc hunter, Steve Irwin, so that's going to be very exciting. We also want to thank our other underwriters, such as iKidsFishing.com. It's the first kids' fishing show in the USA, starring kids, teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages at Chautauqua Lake in western New York. That website is www.wewantyou.com. It's one of America's finest fishing resorts. Also, Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road. Now, that's a job, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Call them at 317-243-0700. And also, we'd like to thank all of our individual underwriters, such as Jeannie Harold, Harley Gines, many, many more. You can become a supporter of this broadcast. Go to LarryTheAnimalGuy.com and contact yours truly, and we'll tell you how easy it is. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Our discussion tonight is the importance of using animals in education, regards to wildlife educators across the country, of course, the zoos that do such work, taking animals into schools and libraries and healthcare centers and nature centers. And Jim, a lot of people don't realize that zoos work with a lot of private individuals that breed some fairly rare exotic animals.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the zoos, if you carry this too far, the zoos will be affected as well. What we've got to do is to get rid of the law enforcement mentality with the regulatory agencies and the politicians, and we've got to get over into the education mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's mostly law enforcement, but anyway, it's a real challenge, and I'm hoping that I can, you know, I've been involved for so many years. I was recently asked to give a talk out in the far northwest, Oregon and Washington. And there were about 300 wildlife biologists who came to that conference. And, boy, it was pretty interesting because about 75% of them said that they had gone into the business wildlife biology because they grew up watching Wild Kingdom.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, and, of course, we always worked with animals out of the wild on Wild Kingdom a little bit. I carried on my lecture career all over the place. People ask me to come speak still, and they say, by the way, would you bring your animals? So they don't want me at all. They want to see. But I know as a fact, I've been doing this long enough, that if you want to get somebody's attention long enough to say something of value, it's pretty good to have an ambassador or an animal there with you that you can treat respectfully. And I have, when I did the Today Show for 15 years, every 2 weeks, we found out that the school teachers were using my spot as curricula and showing it to the kids. But it was very interesting what they said the kids got out of it. It wasn't the facts. It wasn't the zoology or the facts and figures that were talked about. It was the fact that I seemed to enjoy working with animals, and I treated them in a way that was respectful. That's what those young kids got out of it. Well, I was sort of happy to hear that, because you're absolutely right. If you handle an animal and raise them properly, you can show them the respect that they deserve, and you don't have to make statements like they should all be left alone out in the wild. But that's a that's a kiss of death to many animals today. And we've got there. I think, Larry, there are three justifications for having an animal out of the wild before audiences, and one of them is to propagate them so we can restock zoos with animals that are born in out of the wild. And you mentioned a lot of private individuals are doing that. The other one is for education. There's nothing like looking into the eye of some of these animals. I've been doing this much too long, and I have, just like you, I've got thousands and thousands of pages of thank you notes from schools and various organizations, adult organizations too, that actually, you know, say how much they enjoyed the program and what was said.
Sure.
And that, luckily, is still going on. The third thing is that we have to start experimenting with animals to see if at some point, if we raise them out of the wild, can we really restock them back into the wild. That's becoming very important. It's a tricky thing to do. I know there are certain animals like the snow leopards and others that live in such remote areas that you could probably raise one and make sure that you're not anthropomorphizing with it and turning it into some animal that just loves humans.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a real challenge to do that. So those are three really, I think, very important reasons why some people, the people that are professional and have, you know, learned how to do this, should be able to continue on that as a way of connecting the public with, very closely with some animals. Let me just finally say that, you know, those 3,000, 2,000, 3,000 tigers in India, if you try to talk to a group and you want to tell them or even show pictures of a tiger or what they are to an audience, it falls short. But if you have a cat that you can show the personality and use all the talent that you've got, I don't mean talking about it being a pet or anything like that.
Right.
But if you know what you're doing, you can present that animal to an audience, and they'll never forget it. And they will form a connection. People of all ages will form a connection, so we can maybe do something to save those animals in India. And
well,
by the way, animals are not just for children. It's now gotten to the point where we're facing extinction in so many different areas, it's time for us to affect public attitudes and adult attitudes in a hurry. Unfortunately, a lot of our people in position of responsibility have never worked with an animal, don't really know even how to talk about the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a sad situation. There was a poll done a couple of years ago. I'm not the kind of person that dwells on the negative, by the way. But there was a poll done that said that less than 50%, I'm sorry, 5%, less than 5% of the American public spends more than a half an hour a year thinking about the welfare of wildlife, wilderness, and open space. Mm. And that's a sad fact of life, and that's one of the reasons why the politicians who are running for office, I don't know one politician from a county commissioner to the president of the United States that has elevated on their political platform when they're running for office that how we treat this earth is important to human beings as an important political platform. It's not there. They talk a little bit about, they throw coins out to the word environment and environmentalism, but that's such an ambiguous term that, you know, a lot of people are turned off by. The environmental groups have not learned that communication is the biggest challenge we're facing, and you have to link working with the natural world with how it benefits somebody working for a living, trying to feed their family. Well, Larry, if you don't watch out, I'll get on my soapbox, so I better hang up for a little while.
Well, I've always considered the work that we do, Jim Nessie, yourself, and myself, that we're public relations for the natural world. And let's face it, I am sure over the 34 years, Jim Nessie has made people love alligators and put them in such
a
positive
light. Well, at least respect
life.
Them. We got to be careful using human terms, but at least we respect them and are interested and understand them. Jim may love an alligator, but I've learned that you gotta be a little bit careful.
I lost my original big alligator, the one that I worked with Steve Irwin with, and I lost that big alligator, and I'm going to tell you, it was like losing a family member, and I'm not.
I'm
not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, it really. I was absolutely in a state of depression, and thank God for family and friends that said, you know what, you are the one that made it happen, and. You know, thank goodness I was able to work with this big guy, and now he has been just an ambassador. You know what? I had a breakthrough with an autistic boy. Little Sammy wasn't talking. He met Bubba.
Yeah.
He couldn't stop talking. His mom started crying.
Yeah.
So just that one event in my life was worth everything forever, and how important it is to bring in the natural world to people and to expose them to animals that are just so incredible.
Yeah, and we need to all get together so that we can make sure that the public and the regulatory agencies know that. By the way, it was also unnecessary to kill all those cats and kill the animals in the Ohio episode. If they'd known what they were doing, you know, the trouble is, you had people coming up there from the zoo world that were saying, well, there's no alternative. There is an alternative to doing that. During the hurricane at the Miami Zoo years ago, blew down a lot of the fences, but all the animals were basically standing in the same area, and the ones that had moved away came right back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can panic. We panic because we don't know enough about the reality of some animal like a tiger or lion. What we do is we're basing this on our fear of being bitten or killed, and we panic and we go in there and blow the heck out of them. The thing is interesting, had those been alligators, you know, nobody would have cared had they been shot.
Right.
But, there are lots of people around the country that are really concerned about the fact that they just went in there and blew those animals apart. You have to plan ahead. You obviously, the reason that happened is that it's never happened before. You know, nobody's ever let a large group of animals out. There have been animals at zoos that have killed people, But in the private sector that we're in, I don't think there's ever been an incident. I know there hasn't been before an audience, but even, you know, it's been an incident. So what I'm saying is that maybe this will teach people not to panic. There are always bad apples in the basket, and this guy was obviously a bad apple. But that doesn't mean that the other apples aren't good and doing well. And by the way, have you heard about the mountain lion that was killed on a highway in Connecticut?
Really?
And, been a rumor, it had been around, and they traced it back with the DNA, found out that that cat had come all the way from Wisconsin, all the way to the east, and had never bothered anybody, and it may have gone after a few dogs or cats. But anyway, it was going back north when it got killed on the highway. But it's interesting that we panic, or those people panicked, because, once again, they were afraid if they didn't kill them that their jobs might be jeopardized, because people would say, well, how come you let that person get hurt? Anyway, there are other ways of doing it. I will explain at the right time sometime how you can handle a situation like that very quickly and very safely without having to kill them all.
Well, don't you think, Jim and Larry, that there should be an automatic, if you're going to keep big cats in any big mammals, bears, what have you, in a situation like that, and you touched on it when you said, you know, like the hurricanes down in Florida and you know, several facilities were leveled and snakes escaped and animals escaped. If you take a look at why shouldn't facilities be required to have a backup plan, whether it be, you know, with the technology we have today and what we know about animals. And also you touched on it, Jim, when you said that animals will typically, you know, they want to have their security blanket too. It's not that they're going to just start hunting people. You know, that was way over the top, I think.
Jim, it's never happened. There have been cats occasionally get loose from a zoo or one spotted in California. You know, they don't go around chasing people around trying to kill them, I guarantee you.
Right.
But you will have bad apples, and actually the USDA have such incredible rules nowadays, you can't even keep a cat if you don't have double fencing and all kinds of backup situations. This guy went out there and cut it with bowl cutters. In fact, anybody can go up to a zoo and let everything out. If they have the philosophy that animals should not be kept out of the wild, you know, there are certain people around that would go in there and cut the cages with bowl cutters and let them out.
Sure.
But you have to have, in the natural parks that I design, that are called educational wildlife adventure centers, they're actually ecological parks. I have a whole lot of ways of keeping anything like that from happening, but first of all, the animals have to go into a nighttime security area, or an area has to be available when there's a storm that the storm can't possibly do anything to. There are all kinds of ways. I mean, there are big cats in zoological parks all over the country, and you don't find episodes like this. This was a guy who was a bit out of his mind, who had been harassed by the regulatory agencies up to his neck. He had just been in jail for a year, and his wife left him, and he just said, to heck with it, I'm going to let them all out. But
yeah,
the guy basically thought he was probably helping those animals, because some of them had been confiscated. But nevertheless, there has to be tight regulations. I'm certainly not against that, but you can't have people that don't know even how to identify the animal doing the regulations. That's becoming very, very common.
That's commonplace, yes.
People that work for the USDA or for the states can't even identify the animals that they're supposed to be regulating.
Well,
I'll tell you how bad it's become. In the state of Georgia now, you know, they're putting down the laws from a law enforcement standpoint. And if you are lecturing with something like a cat that weighs less than 40 pounds or so. The law now is you got to build a metal fence in front of the stage in an auditorium. Let's say you're at a school or somewhere like that. And you have to tie a cable around the animal's neck, fasten it to a concrete block. And I know somebody that had a little white tiger that were lecturing and doing a wonderful job of lecturing. But they told her that she had to put this block on a cable. Well, she said, I weigh twice, three times as much as a block. Why can't I hold the leash, you know? But you see, that didn't give the comfort legally to the
right.
regulatory agency. This was a state regulatory system. So anyway, I went to the state of Georgia, and I said, look, why don't we work this out, because we've got some really dedicated educators, not very many of them. There are only five or six probably in the whole state. But I said, you're gonna eliminate the possibility of people really learning to enjoy, not joy, but respect the natural world by doing this. And I said, everybody wants to touch an animal. That's now against the law, by the way, to touch an animal. I don't think legally you can even touch that gator. But most people have this in compulsion to want to touch something. And that's very normal, you know. That's one way you form connections. So they said, I said to this guy, I said, well, what if we put a muzzle on the predator when we bring it out on the stage? And he was head of the Department of Wildlife in the state of Georgia, and the law enforcement section of it. And he said, well, yeah, he said, that might be good. But I can just see me taking a cat out with a muzzle on it and telling people how beautiful and how wonderful it is, you know? So anyway, I thought that was a little extreme, but then I tried something really extreme. I said, what if we got the skin of a dead cat, you know, one that's died, and we cut a portion of that skin out, and I can put the skin over the real cat, and people can touch the skin without touching the cat. Would that be possible? And surprisingly enough to me, the guy said, yeah, well, that might work, too.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Can you see us putting a dead animal skin over a live one? And because then you're not touching the animal, see?
Right.
Scary.
How about that? So that's the extreme that people are going to. By the way, talking about alligators up in your neck of the woods, the Burmese pythons that have gotten an awful lot of press down in the Everglades, I know the guy that's doing a lot of the work on them. He's the real expert. His name is Joe Wazalewski.
Right, I know Joe.
Yeah. Is. But let me tell you, during the freeze last year, there were almost 75% of those snakes were killed by the cold weather. And I don't think you have to worry too much about alligators on the Illinois River. They
yeah.
sometimes will find a hole in the bank that they can get into, but you're never going to have... They would have been up here a long time ago, believe me, if they could survive through the winters.
Yep.
Well,
but anyway, think a little bit about over-regulation. I don't want to insult, you know, the regulatory systems. A lot of agencies are working at it. But they're getting so far out today because of their desire to create job security. They're coming down with, you know, they're coming down with laws that are unbelievable. Go ahead, Jim.
No, I was just going to say that they definitely are trying to justify their existence. I see it. It's just frustrating because, you know, for 34 years I've had an impeccable track record. I have insurance. You know, I name yeah. any institutional, yeah. additional insured. I couldn't make... Here's the thing. I have a reputation just like Larry has and just like Jim Fowler has. And the last thing you're going to have... There's no way I'm going to have an incident because I couldn't make the gator bite me if I tried.
There
and I'm
going
to tell you, I couldn't make him bite me if I tried. I've done programs where I've had people walk up, kick him in the face. He does nothing. I've had people
yep.
walk up out of a crowd and stomp on his head. What did he do? Nothing. I was at America's Outdoor Show back in January up at in a northern suburb here in Illinois. I had a guy in his 40s jump on Bubba's back, grabbed his head, started thrashing him around. I knocked the guy off Bubba. The guy said to me he didn't even know he was alive. I said, excuse me, sir, 3-year-old
oh, yeah.
kids are asking me to pet them.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's frustrating, but the thing of it is things have to be, you have to have be fail-safe. Things have to be fail-safe when
yeah,
you're working
you do.
With the public.
But let's work at trying to make sure the public don't consider them something that's going to hurt them. We'll never
agree.
Save things in the wild.
I agree, but what I'm saying, Jim, is you always have that 1% of the population that
yeah.
people do stuff. And
well,
in,
sure,
in your,
yeah.
And your program has to be fail-safe, and this is why I select a group of animals, and I'm sure Larry does the same thing. You
yeah.
select a group of individuals that are great individuals, and they all are yep. individuals.
Well, that's if you're responsible. Larry, I don't know if I have the time, but I just want to throw one more thing out.
Okay.
Can I do that real quick?
Sure.
Okay. animals have nothing to do with the safety of human beings. It's so rare what happens that that's why it's newsworthy. But there are other things. There's a book called The Statistical Review that the U.S. Department of Government puts out. And it talks about what really hurts people and kills people.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, let me tell you what happens. There's 800 people were killed by horses last year. There's not one law against raising horses. I'm talking about horses that kick and bite and squash people against walls. Also, and I won't even go into automobiles and bicycles and electrical things in your house. I saw a very interesting statistic. Last year in America, there were 84,000 people maimed by lawnmowers. You know, these riding lawnmowers?
Sure.
Losing limbs, losing arms. And 2,000 children were actually killed in America last year by these automatic lawnmowers. There's not one law against that. So what I'm going to do is, and maybe you two guys would like to join, I'm forming a organization, and when the lawnmower gets out of your yard, we're going to shoot it. We're going to blow it up with a shotgun. And I'm going to put that on television because they're the most dangerous things we're facing.
I like it, Jim. I like
and
it.
You can't pet a lawnmower, and if you do, you'll lose your arm.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, we need to start showing people what really we have to think about is killing people and get out of this routine of thinking that animals are our main course of fear. We got to start talking about animals so that we don't create the fear of them.
Well, I've always considered us public yep. relations for the natural world, and when we speak to a group of 500
yep.
or so school children, we realize we're not speaking to future biologists, zoologists, scientists, whatever, but they're all individuals that someday are going to have the ability to vote, and they're going to be the ones that are going to make the decisions on whether we should save wild places such as Yellowstone National Park, Glacier, the wilds of the Amazon, South America. And I know that over my limited amount of audiences that I've done with for the 31 years, that more than once, right now the head vet at the Buffalo Zoo is inspired by my program to do the work that he does. I've lost count of the Department of Natural Resource workers that have come up to me.
Oh,
and
yeah. Absolutely.
The reason I'm a conservation officer is because of your show. And I know what the effect that Jim Fowler has through the magic of television and Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom and Jim Nesci in Chicago, that we have an audience, and we can tell these people the situations that's going on as far as what we have to deal with every day. And when I do, they're an absolute horror, realizing how difficult it is to do this job, to do this profession that we have chosen our lives to perform. But I'm going to tell you and the audience that listens around the world, I wouldn't do anything else.
Well, you're doing something, and Jim, Larry, last thing, I got to put my 2 cents in on this. We have to clean up our act and realize that communication is the challenge of the 21st century, but we have to have strong messages. The zoological parks, the lecturers, and anybody that works with animals, even in film, should start relating human welfare with the existence of the natural world. If we don't tell people what's in it for us by saving wildlife, wilderness, and open space, we're not going to save it. And there's not one conservation group that I know and not one zoo in America that actually link what you're seeing and what you're experiencing there with human welfare. How does it help us? you got to say what's in it for us. As horrible as that is, we humans are very self-oriented, and if you don't know why it's important to your life, I'm afraid we're not going to elevate the priority to the point where we're going to save very many things. That's my mission statement. As the honorary chairman of the Explorers Club, I'm going to try to bring exploration around to the point where they're communicating and talking to the public more about the research and the exploration and the discovery that's happening by true explorers all over the world. How does that affect our lives positively? So that's my ending statement, Larry.
Jim Nesci, would you like to say something?
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Jim. I'll tell you, it was great to be a part of this program.
Good.
Outstanding program. Good show, Dr. Day.
Unbelievable. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I got one thing to say. Don't let this one incident in Ohio ruin it for these great educators. Also, if you didn't learn something tonight, you might be stupid.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank... I knew he'd come up with something special.
Now, did we run over time and lose about half the program, or did?
Oh no, we're still here. We can do that. We would like to thank Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom star Jim Fowler, an educator. I even forgot to mention Explorers Club earlier, and also from the state of Illinois, Jim Nesci. He'll be back with us in a couple weeks. Next week on the program, Tim Bogert, a musician with such legendary bands. You heard of Vanilla Fudge, Jim?
Oh, yeah. Never have.
Oh,
I
well.
Have.
No, somebody said chocolate lasts for 4 years, but I don't know about Vanilla Fudge.
Well, we'll have a great show again next week. We'd like to thank our guests. Folks, this is Larry Batson, and you have been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.